Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Jim Ostroff is here, too. He's our good buddy, and sitting in for Joan Pryde today, Jim is Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Letters, that outstanding operation up there in Washington, D.C., the Kiplinger Editors, now in their 83rd year in business and continue to be a small business, a family business, and I'm really proud of what those guys do every day, and including Jim Ostroff. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Jim, and good morning.
It's good to have you back. Before we get into the letter, I wonder, we have to touch on what happened yesterday in the Senate. Now, according to Article 21, I think it is, any senator, for any reason that he or she deems appropriate, can call for a secret meeting. And if he does that, or she does that, the president of the Senate has to shut the Senate down, run everybody out who's not a senator. They literally have to sweep the offices to make sure there are no recording devices. It takes a couple of hours to get all that cleared out. And then they come back in, they have a session. Now, in times past, from what I can tell, whenever this has happened, both sides of the aisle were given notice. The other side of the aisle was given notice by the side that wanted the secret meeting. Were given notice. They were told. They might not have agreed with it, but they were told, this is what we want, this is why we want it, and this is when we're going to do it. And so there was some notice. Apparently, the minority leader, Harry Reid from Nevada, Democrat from Nevada, got up on the podium, and if you've seen the video, Jim, you know what it looks like. He basically says, I'm calling for Section 21 or whatever, I think that's what it's called.
That's correct.
And I'm calling for a secret meeting.
Right.
And if you see his gesture, and if you look at his face, you can tell that he looks kind of like a little boy who's had the red licked off of his candy.
Well, let's just say they certainly did it, and
the Republicans were blindsided.
Well, they were here, and for the first time, really, since 1980, they went into a secret session. But the thing here, of course, it's different. Was essentially they're saying, "Yep, okay, we're exercising our constitutional rights as senators, and we're just shutting the Senate down," essentially.
Well, it seemed to me to be grandstanding, and it seemed to me to be a reaction to not being pleased that they didn't get all the indictments that they wanted out of the special prosecutor, but more than anything else, Jim, what it shows me is that this greatest deliberative body and the Congress of the United States, basically, including besides this, just the Senate, the whole Congress has devolved into a pretty acrimonious community, and it's really sad. And what upsets me about it the most, Jim, right, is that to me it devalues the whole process, the whole, you know, whatever image that you and I as average citizens and voters who elect these people and send them to Washington to represent us, to me it devalues that process and what their job is, and therefore maybe makes people not even want to get involved in the process. That's what upsets me about it.
Well, we've seen rancor and animosity that's unprecedented, except perhaps during the period in the late 1850s,
yeah,
or so. And, you know, it certainly very little gets done here. And there once was a time when they said Democrats, Republicans would battle to the hilt and make accusations about this and that. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, but they met, they worked, and when the day was done, they sat down together, you know, And they
that's not happening these days, is it?
Right. Not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know, it, by and large, one or the other is in the enemy camp.
And, well, and it's gotten ad hominem now. They're calling each other names. They're making accusations at each other, and it's really sad. And I'll tell you what I think it is. And after all these years now, it's been several years. I still think it's something that I started talking about a long time ago, and that is that after 40 years in the majority, the Democrats still haven't figured out how to be and still can't live in the minority skin, in their own minority skin. That's one thing. And the Republicans, after 40 years in the minority, have not learned how to really be the majority. And in both cases, it's a lack of leadership.
Well, it really is. I mean, that lack of leadership and, I said, a divisive mindset that has gripped everybody, and you're absolutely right. You know, the Democrats are saying, you know, just give us another year or 2 years, there'll be an election, we'll make major gains, and we'll be in the majority. And, you know, on the other side, Republicans just not able. Well, you're correct.
Well, think about,
not able to do it.
Think about this, Jim. We've got a young person out there who's graduating from college this year. And who's maybe they've done a little work in politics and they're interested in politics, and they could be the next, this woman could be the next, or could be a future president of the United States. This young woman could be a future president, certainly a future statesman in on some level in this country, an ambassador, a senator, a congressman, or whatever it might be. Those people, that person could be that person in the future, and they see these people that should be their mentors, that should be their heroes, people they look up to and want to aspire to become. They see them behaving like this. I got to be thinking, they're thinking, you know what? You know, maybe being a small business owner doesn't look so bad now.
Well,
where are the quality new crop coming from? I mean, if anybody who sees what's going on and says, anybody who saw what happened yesterday, Jim, and says, hey, I want some of that. I don't think I want them running for office. What do you think?
Well, I would say that it's becoming less likely that Mr. Smith or Ms. Smith will want to go to Washington.
Yeah.
And we all suffer for it, period, because we need leaders.
We need the best and the brightest, Jim.
And
I don't think we're getting that.
Well, it's becoming harder and harder.
We're getting the least and the dimmest, I think, is what we're getting. Mm-hmm. And more's the pity. Jim, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, Jim Oistroff and I are going to talk about some of the tax stuff. There are a few things, believe it or not, there actually are a few things going on that are getting done up there. And we're going to talk about that, especially with regard to tax reform. This is news, folks. This is brand new stuff. We're going to talk about how it's going to affect you and your individual return, as well as your small business return. 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with Jim Oistroff.
She's still in the street, smiling from my head to her feet. I said, hey, now, what is this? Now, baby, maybe, maybe she's in need of a kiss.
Back. 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We're rocking and rolling with our good buddy Jim Oistroff. You're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Jim's here, too. He's a really cool guy. Associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and that's Foreigner in the background there, by the way, folks. Tax reform, Jim. That's the lead story this week in the Kiplinger letter, isn't it?
Well, it is, because it is very important, and it's hot news. And we think somewhere along the way something will happen. They've taken an important first step.
A lot of work's already been done, hasn't it?
Well, it has the, you know, the president appointed a bipartisan panel over here at the beginning of the year, and now they have issued basically two reports, two proposed plans for, you know, simplifying the tax code, but also, you know,
we need to put the little quotes around simplifying,
quote unquote, simplified. Yeah. the thing is that, but more importantly, the real idea here is to make the code in some way, quote-unquote, fairer in terms of who pays, how much pays, and to encourage, basically, its investment and investment decisions as well as spending.
One of the things I heard them say yesterday when they made the when they announced their findings and what they're going to be recommending is that the now 69, I think, line short form, the forms, 69 different things that you got to fill out for the short form, is going to be reduced to something like 39 lines or something like that.
That's what they say, and
that's an improvement. I'll give them that. Good for them.
It is. But we have, you know, you really have to wait and see what comes out. I'll just say, I've been in Washington long enough that I reported on the beginnings of the previous tax reform in 1981 and 1982.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when it was first instituted in 1913, Jim.
Yes. I was right there, and you know, and I said we're going to have two lines to fill out. But the thing is, even there, I remember they were saying that. You know, it will be so simple. Most people can use a postcard to file their tax return.
Right.
Didn't happen. And in fact, it took about 5 years to get something done.
Right.
And it wasn't simple.
Well, and I understand. I mean, I haven't seen this form myself in so long. I don't know for sure, but my experts are telling me that the instructions for the short form is like 33 pages long.
Oh yes, yeah. I mean, and of course, you know that most people do find it daunting, and a large number of people just throw up their hands and say, "I'm gonna bring it to a tax preparer or my accountant or something like that."
I did that a long time ago, Jim. One of the things that I'm very glad that they're addressing, and they really seem to be taking aim at this, and that's the alternative minimum
the
tax.
AMC.
What an abomination! What an evil device the government has wrought on us, on the American taxpayer, as the AMT.
Well, you know, it started off a number of years ago as a way, at that time they were saying, to catch, you know, extremely wealthy people who were finding ways to pay no tax at all.
There were legal tax avoidance tools
right.
in the 80s that people of higher incomes could use to avoid taxes.
That's right.
And so they came up with AMT to catch them. It's literally a parallel universe of tax calculation from the standard tax calculation.
It is literally. But of course, you know, like so many things Congress done, it has grown like Topsy. It has become a Frankenstein to capture millions of people, and if nothing is done, most people in this country will end up paying more taxes, the official tax rate, and then there is the AMT.
Right. But Jim, let me remind people, and I've told you this before, folks. When the AMT became evil, it was a clever device in its outset, when it was formed originally, until 1986. And that's when it became evil, Jim. And that's because in 1986, all of those tax devices that rich people could use to avoid tax were basically disallowed. And they were phased out completely over a period of I think, 3 years. So in 1986, when those loopholes went away, the alternative minimum tax should have gone away. And ever since then, now, folks, almost 20 years, American taxpayers have been paying a tax that they shouldn't have been paying, that they didn't do anything to cause them to have to pay that. It's just that the government got hooked on those tax dollars, on those drugs, and they would not turn loose of them. And that's the reason why I'm glad that they're working on it right now. They've got to get rid of AMT. It is, in my opinion, it's unconstitutional.
Well, it affects millions of people over here.
And millions more every year.
And it does. And that's the point. Where I think it would be next year or so that the majority of filers would end up because of AMT, they will pay more tax than they would if they followed the schedule.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, the politicians better get this fixed, because the more people, once you get to that level you were talking about, that's when we're going to have people storming the ramparts with their sickles and their hose and rakes and pitchforks and everything. They're going to be storming the ramparts and voting these people out of there.
Well,
they're going to be voting people in who will fix this stupid problem. You're right, folks. I get irritated by this. Really ticks me off. AMT is a classic example of government abuse, in my opinion. Quick break. Right back after these messages with our good friend Jim Ostroff. Stay with us.
Is bad boy.
You're bad, and I like it.
Yep. He's one bad apple.
That's right, that's right, we're bad. That's right.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks for joining us today. It's great to be with you. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. And you know what you got to look for? If you just tuned in, your IQ is going to go up exponentially every minute you listen to the show. Jim Ostroff has said that many times before, haven't you, Jim?
Yes, I have. And my IQ, in fact, has gone up 1 point. No,
just hanging around us. I know it happens. It's a phenomenon. They're studying this at Johns Hopkins, by the way. What makes people's IQ go up so much just listening to the Small Business Advocate Show?
I can validate that. Why I got a government grant to study this, to show it.
Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, folks, my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. It'll help you. To help you to start, run, and grow your small business. It's a little bit of small business heaven, and we got at least two things you can subscribe to for free there. You can get our Small Business Advocate newsletter, which comes out every Sunday by email, and the blog, which goes out every single day, and it updates you on all the things that we're doing here every day. And it's all free, thanks to our outstanding corporate partners. Jim, let's continue our discussion on tax reform. We pilloried the alternative minimum tax. I'm going to really be watching that. See how they do with that. What are they going to do about the tax brackets? How's that working?
All right. Well, again, there are two plans right now, and what they would do, let's say basically this: under the current law, we have six brackets from 10% to 35%, at least nominally, and one of them would reduce it to 4, so it would be 15% to 33%, and another one would cut it just to 3, 15, 25, and
right.
I should say on both, well, there are many provisions, but on both of the proposals, they both would repeal the hated AMT.
Right.
And
also the marriage tax penalty, right?
Right. That's correct.
Another evil tax.
That's another one. And it basically would say, deductions for state and local taxes, of course, as well as home ownership, mortgages.
Right. And the exemptions would change from a credit to, would change from an exemption to a credit, right?
That's correct, right.
Which the exemption just comes off of your income, the credit comes off your tax.
Well, that is correct. And, of course, one thing here is that the dividends, you know, that we, probably most Americans, many, many tens of millions receive,
right,
from companies, stocks, mutual funds, whatever, would not be taxed anymore, at least under one plan.
They wouldn't be taxed at all, or just as long-term capital gains?
One plan, one would exclude all dividends from taxation.
Wow.
Another one would tax them at a 15% rate.
Right.
And the capital gains, you know, one would exclude 75% of the corporate gains, and the other, you know, would tax at 15%.
Right. Well, I like the way that's, Because that's really going to increase capital formation. That's going to increase. That's going to help the economy. You know, Jim, I'm afflicted with the supply side economics disease. I think it really does work. I believe in it very much. And these are things. The things that you're talking about that's being proposed are all for a supply sider like me.
Well, they are, and in fact, you know, those who look at the substantial increases the economy made, particularly in the 90s,
right,
you know, the greatest boom period we ever saw,
right,
in many ways have the tax reform during, basically tax reform initiated early in
right.
the Reagan years.
Right,
To thank for that.
Absolutely. Well, and folks, even if you're not a supply sider, you're still going to benefit from this too, by the way. It's not just supply. The supply siders are just going to like it. If you're not a supply sider, you're not going to like it, but you're still going to benefit from it. Top tax rates on businesses is coming down under the new proposal too, right?
Well, it would, actually. And
there's also a corporate AMT. That's the other thing we haven't mentioned. In addition to personal AMT, there's a corporate AMT.
Well, there is an
alternative minimum tax.
The top rate, you know, is 35%, and that would decline to 32%. But again, it snares, ultimately here, it snares many, many companies, and it could be big and small. Less money.
The best way to raise taxes, I mean, the best way to raise revenue is to put people to work and to let businesses flourish. And that's the supply siders' creed right there, folks. And I believe it works. 20 Till, we'll be right back with Jim Ostroff right after these messages. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
As I was walking down the street one day, a man came up.
Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Jim Ostroff is here. We're having a great visit with him. Jim, tell us a little bit about Kiplinger. I know about your website, Kiplinger.com, and I encourage my audience to go there all the time. Great site, Kiplinger.com, you guys have got some of the best publications in the world.
Well, thank you, Jim.
The Kiplinger course, letter comes out every week. That's the one you and I work off of. What else you got?
Right. Yeah, well, we have Kiplinger Forecasts, which is, in essence, the letter writ large, and virtually every item you read in the letter is on that site, more or less is a full story, full mm-hmm. article with and links,
now that is a subscriber side of their website. You have to subscribe to that.
Yes, you do.
But if you subscribe to the letter, then you get access to that.
You get it free. And I should say, and then that's KiplingerForecast.com. But at Kiplinger.com, there are many other resources that are free. You'll also find our Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. And then a lot of other just free information there that's really very helpful.
Well, also, you've got the three biweekly letters, too.
Right.
The California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter. And you can subscribe at Kiplinger.com. Give us that phone number, Jim.
Yeah, sure, Jim. That is toll-free, 800-544-0155.
And be sure to ask for that 30-day free trial and tell them that I sent you to when you get there. Jim, let's move over and talk about the economy. Mr. Greenspan and his gaggle increased the Fed funds rate yesterday, another quarter point. It's now 4%. That makes prime 7%. And, Jim, that makes the money small businesses borrow 8, 9, 10, and in some cases 11%.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
And
we live in a world of prime plus.
We do. Absolutely. Just try going to the bank, most companies, most people, and say, I'd like the prime rate if I could. And they'll have you arrested
mm-hmm.
for being...
Some businesses get prime, but not most small businesses, especially when they're younger and they don't have the track record. They don't have the... they haven't been able to amass the retained earnings on their balance sheet to make the banker happy. And so they're a riskier loan. And when you got a riskier loan, the bank's got to charge more interest.
They do. And that's the way it's always been. But as rates move up, it becomes harder or harder to get as much as you need.
Well, it's hard. Well, mainly, you know, they got two issues there, Jim. Not only is it can it be harder to get, but also at some point in time, the loan at that rate, a 10% interest loan, won't work on the model. It won't work on the business model.
No, it's too expensive. Correct. And so it does affect not only business formation, but business operations and expansion.
Yep.
And so that is somewhat of a drag on the economy.
Yeah, and which is what they're trying to do is to make sure the economy doesn't get overheated. But they've already gotten, in my opinion, into an area that I've left them alone now for a couple of years. They've had interest rates down in the area where small businesses could flourish, and necessarily so. But they're. Of course, some people say that they're going to keep raising them too, Jim, on up to 4.5% maybe.
They likely will by early next year, just as Mr. Greenspan departs.
Mm-hmm.
They likely will.
It'll be interesting to see how Mr. Ben Bernanke, the replacement replacement.
How's he going to do?
We'll be tracking that. Jim, let's move down and talk about business costs. You guys say electricity is going up next year?
Oh yes, absolutely. On average, across the United States, about 10% higher than this year, and in many places, it could be in the New England states, Florida, Texas, California, and even parts of it could be Michigan and Wisconsin, rates may well be up by 15%. And basically that has to do with the steeply higher costs for natural gas as well as coal. And that eventually gets passed on.
Well, and I'll tell you, there are two influences, I think, in terms of electricity, Jim. One is a lot of electricity is made from natural gas.
Right.
So the natural gas prices go up, the cost of electricity goes up. That's natural. I understand that.
About 70% of our power is made from coal and natural gas.
But the other thing, Jim, that's going to happen, I believe, and this is also a natural occurrence, it's all about what it costs per BTU. You know, many plants out there have dual systems where they can flip a switch and go from gas to electricity for their process, depending on which one costs them the least BTU that month that day.
That's right.
So it's all about what it costs per BTU of output. And so if it costs more to use natural gas than it does electricity, then the electricity distributors, they can say, well, you know what? We got an opportunity here to make more money because where are they going to go? Then, you know, we're still going to be cheaper than natural gas. So they got a chance to raise their prices.
I think that's another
reason why it's going to go up.
Well, they do. And I should say, basically, a lot of companies really continue to make some very good strides in energy efficiency. And this isn't wild Buck Rogers stuff. It's stuff that people can do very easily.
Right. Absolutely. Jim, good news on the travel front. Now, I know you make a lot of trips to Europe. You're a big world traveler, Jim.
Whenever I can.
And so it looks like trips to Europe are going to be cheaper this year, according to Kiplinger.
Well, yeah. Particular airfares, will be, higher than next year because of higher fuel costs.
Well, but now, Jim, that's not going to affect you because the cheaper flights to Europe is not going to help you because you're going to be in your private jet, right?
Well, absolutely. I got the citation standing by.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Supreme Court nominee Sam Alito right after these messages. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're grooving with our good buddy, Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, Jim, your fine editor emeritus, Mr. Austin Kiplinger, is going to get a very important, very significant, well-deserved, long overdue award and some recognition at the National Press Club next week, isn't he?
Yes, he is, and this is an annual award that the basically National Press Foundation gives to the person they deem to be the preeminent journalist in the United States. And
well, that's the reason I say it's much overdue. Long overdue, because he and folks, you know Mr. Austin Kiplinger. He's been on the show a number of times. 86, I think, 85,
87. Or, he just 80, turned 87.
87. Just we celebrated his birthday a month and a half ago, right, on this show, plus the anniversary of Kiplinger. And what a national treasure he is.
Well, he certainly is, and we are very fortunate at Kiplinger that he comes into work every day. He works to participate.
Ramrod, 87 years old, folks. Handsome as a movie star. Ramrod straight. He could bounce. He could probably leap a 3-rail fence right now. And sharp as a tack. I wish I had his mind right now. He's got the best voice. I even envy his voice. He's a great human being, a great American, and it's much deserved. And I just couldn't go any further, Jim, without telling my audience about that. And so congratulations to him. Please give him our best, and we'll be contacting him as well. We're going to try to get him on the show as well to talk about that. But anyway, let's move on over and talk about what's going on, a little more politics, and that's Sam Alito, the Supreme Court nominee. Is he going to make it, Jim?
Well, we believe he will at the end of the day. He does have very solid credentials, and the thing here, ultimately, it turns on numbers in the Senate. The Republicans do have the majority,
right,
and the Democrats keep talking here about doing a filibuster.
Mm-hmm. But even Jim, I even heard three. You know the gang of 14 that split up and basically took the leadership away from the leaders in Senate. They seven from each side of the aisle came together and said, okay, we're going to basically neutralize this thing. But I heard today that three of the seven on the Democrat side said that the opposition that Alito's nomination rose to the what do they call it, the extreme circumstances or whatever, that might cause them to cross over and filibuster.
Well, we'll have to see at the end of the day if they do carry out their nuclear option.
Their nuclear option, and so of course the Republicans' nuclear option is what, Jim?
Is to go with a majority, simple majority, which they have. To change congressional, let's say, regulations,
right,
to basically ban filibusters for judicial nominations,
and just for that one issue.
That's
the nuclear option. That's when now you talk about righteous indignation. When that happens, the Democrats are really going to get excited about that. But of course, they know that could happen, and so I guess what we're saying, Jim, is if we thought things got ugly yesterday in Washington, we may not have seen nothing yet.
Absolutely, Mr. Jolson, you are correct. It could turn very, very ugly. Both sides know what they, in a sense, want to avoid it, because the nuclear option means that there's no one left standing. But no one knows.
Well, and the thing about it, though, Jim, is Judge Sam Alito, is such a fine candidate, darn close to the mold of John Roberts, which they basically couldn't find any reason to vote against, not justified reason. And he's got the credentials, he's got the intelligence and all the background, all the right stuff. The Democrats have got to be really careful of not doing what my friend Rich Galen says in his cyber column today, overreaching. The Democrats have got to be careful about that, don't they?
Well, they absolutely do, because you overreach and, it in essence, come back to haunt you, come back to hurt you, because an awful lot are going to be up for re-election next year.
Mm-hmm. And even many of the left-leaning journalists yesterday were calling, were looking askance at what they pulled off yesterday. So some of the stuff they're doing is even embarrassing some of their own kind. So they probably need to be really kind of careful about that. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here today. Good job.
Wonderful, Jim.
Will you come back another day?
I certainly will. Thank you. Always appreciate our conversation.
We'll look forward to that day. Thanks, Jim Ostroff.
Thank you.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. Next time you talk to me, next time I talk to you, I will be in Western Maryland. I'm coming to see you, Western Maryland, in the Deep Creek Lake area. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.